Now there is the virtue of modesty properly speaking. The fourth virtue under modesty is modesty in the modern or stricter sense, as referring to exterior apparel or clothing. St. Thomas notes that this sense of modesty serves to moderate delights with respect to the senses. This is the virtue which tells us whether our clothing leads others into sins regarding the sixth and ninth commandments. Modesty is a virtue that regulates one's conduct in matters that are apt to lead to forbidden pleasure, St. Thomas says. That is, in the matter of dress, deportment, speech, and things of this sort. Some acts and forms of dress, by their nature, tend to incline people regarding matters of the sixth and ninth commandments. There is a principle which is completely misunderstood, and yet it is the operative principle under which all modern advertising functions, and that is the appetite is moved by the presence of its object. If you put the object in front, you know, you put the object, the concupiscible appetite, that's the one that desires sex, in front of a guy, and then you wonder why he gets worked into a lather. Well, excuse me, but the appetite is moved by the presence of its object. It's the nature of the situation. So what's that mean? Well, if chocolate is your problem, get it out of your sight, because then it won't be in your faculties and it won't be moving your appetites. Or it's the same thing, it's, you know, with custody of the mind or the eyes. This is why certain educational programs that teach these matters to children are gravely sinful, since there is not a proportionate reason for it. Unless experience proves otherwise, and this is the general principle regarding modesty, a person is presumed to react normally in the areas of the sixth and ninth commandments. So a man and a woman dress based upon what the normal individual would react to, not what's... And so what this means is that men and women are required to act and dress in ways which the common person will not be affected. They are not required to worry about the person who is overly sensitive, because then you wouldn't even be able to be in their presence, basically, with some people. Actions and dress which incline others to violate the sixth and ninth commandments are divided into three classes according to their power to incline people in this way. The first is that which strongly inclines us. By themselves, these things produce strong inclinations in the normal person. For example, pornography, the swimsuits that many women wear at beaches, etc. Then there are those which only lightly incline a person, and by themselves they produce modern inclination in the normal person. And then the last is, by themselves they don't produce these inclinations regarding the sixth commandments for the average person, but for some people they can. These things are not directly connected with matters pertaining to the sixth commandment, for example, riding a horse or something like that. Some things tend to incline a little, but which do not affect normal people today, because people are accustomed to a much higher level of stimulation, so things which in the past might have caught people by off guard, they don't affect people as much today. Today, because there are things so common that people are accustomed to them and are not affected by them, there is a general principle which states that what is customary does not excite us. For example, ordinarily looking at a woman along a public street who is wearing a dress that is a little short normally wouldn't affect people, that is, people that are normal. The problem of customary that it doesn't excite, however, also, or the principle, also has a flip side, because it can also be false in certain respects. While it is true that customary normally does not excite, because people are built, the psychology of being around it all the time, they become a customer familiar with it, so that it's not, doesn't move them. Nevertheless, this does not mean that there are not things that are intrinsically immodest. In other words, there are certain things that by their very nature, doesn't matter what the custom is, they are immodest by their very nature. Some things which people do are immodest ex naturo, or by their very nature. For example, wearing bathing suits which do not even cover even a modicum amount. And you're seeing that. It's a serious problem. Billboards with salacious content, etc. There's a whole thing of them. The following applies. Without a proportionate or mitigating that is a sufficient reason, it is a mortal sin to do something which strongly inclines by its nature. Where the action by its nature strongly inclines, only a proportionately reason is a grave reason. For example, a doctor examining the body of someone of the opposite gender to diagnose a disease, or a mitigating reason, some usefulness which is not necessarily grateful useful, for example, someone studying anatomy, not to become a doctor but to acquire the knowledge of these things. There has to be a legitimate proportionate reason. Two, with a proportionate reason, there is no sin committed by doing something which strongly inclines by its nature. So in other words, a doctor who has to examine those of the opposite gender even though the normal person, this would strongly incline them, if he keeps up his professionalism, he can handle it, and it's not an issue, and this is something that's necessary. With a mitigating reason, it is a venial sin to do something which, so if you have a proportionate reason, there's no sin. If it's a mitigating reason, it's another matter. I'll put up a little diagram here. With a mitigating reason, it is venial sin to do something which strongly inclines by its nature. With a mitigating reason, no sin is committed in relationship to something which lightly inclines by its very nature. So if you're watching football and you have a high degree of modesty and those things don't affect you and you see those things and there's no sin necessarily involved, although you have to be careful so that you're not offending God by watching things that offend Him. With a light motive, curiosity, or levity, it is a venial sin to place a cause or to do something which lightly inclines by its nature. So this is the general layout of how this works. Okay, if it's strongly exciting, then if you have no reason for it, no proportion, no legitimate reason, then it's mortally sinful. If you have something that's strongly exciting and there's a proportionate reason, like a doctor for the sake of examination, then there's no sin.
And if that one is not the mitigating, that's a different one?
No, that's a different one.
Okay,
if it's strongly exciting and there's a mitigating reason, then it's venially sinful. All right. And then if it's lightly exciting and there's a mitigating reason, which is basically a proportionate reason, there's no sin involved. And if it's lightly exciting and there's a light motive or not a legitimate reason or mitigating reason, then it's venially sinful. The Vatican under Pope Pius XI stated, "We recall that a dress cannot be called decent which is cut deeper than 2 fingers' breadth under the pit of the throat." So it can't be any farther than this down below. Here he's talking about women, of course. "Which does not cover the arms at least to the elbow," so it has to be at least to the elbows, "and scarcely reaches a bit beyond the knees." In other words, it has to be down below the knees. "Further, dresses of transparent material are improper." So you'll see women, they'll be covered and everything, but you can see right through it. These are not absolutes in the sense of they are a good guideline. So if you want to dress modestly, you just follow that. But remember, this customary doesn't excite. So, you know, if it comes up to here in most women today, most guys wouldn't see anything, you know, big deal, you know, that type of thing. The dresses, I think, is a different matter. If it comes up below the knees, I think you just got problems. And if it gets much below 2 pits, throats, I think for... You know, if it's a little bit below that, it's not that big of a deal. But if it gets much below that, then you're talking about something that can become a problem. These principles regarding the strongly exciting and lightly exciting apply to immodest jokes, books, and that's a problem. One of the things I've noticed is guys, if they want excitement in this area, they just go buy pornography or go look at it on the internet. But women, very often, I've seen this, women will read things like Harlequin romances and think there's nothing wrong with it, even though the descriptions of what is in there is nothing short of pornography. And because it's veiled under the notion of romantic, they think it's okay. That's something that, I'm not suggesting any women here do that, but I'm just saying that you see that from time to time. This also applies to looks, so if you look at people in certain ways, jokes, dress, conversation. Sometimes guys will tell a joke amongst themselves which is gravely immodest, and they do not think it is a problem because they're not in mixed company. The fact is that while it is worse when it is in mixed company, it is still sinful. Moreover, the conversation one has must be properly guarded so that there is no immodest speech which will draw someone else into sin. Both viewing and posing for pornography is a grave sin against modesty. St. Thomas asks the question whether the adornment of women is devoid of mortal sin. He says that as regards the adornment of women, we must bear in mind that women's apparel may incite men to lust, according to Proverbs 7:10, "Behold, a woman meeteth him in a harlot's attire, prepared to deceive souls." Clearly, this also applies to men, so even though St. Thomas is addressing the issue of female attire, the same principles apply to men. He goes on to say that a woman may use means to please her husband, lest through despising her he fall into adultery. So if a married woman adorn herself in order to please her husband, she can do this without sin. Furthermore, those women who have no husband or wish to have one, or who are in a state of life inconsistent with marriage, cannot, without sin, desire to incite lust in those men who see them, because this is to incite them to sin. If, indeed, they adorn themselves with this intention of provoking others to lust, they sin mortally. Whereas if they do so from frivolity or from vanity for the sake of ostentation, it is not always regarded as moral, but sometimes venial, and the same applies to men in this respect. In this regard, St. Augustine says, I do not wish you to be hasty in forbidding the wearing of gold or costly attire, except in the case of those who, being neither married nor wishful to marry, should think how they may please God. Whereas the others think on the things of the world, either husbands how they may please their wives, or wives how they may please their husbands, except that it is unbecoming for women, though married, to uncover their hair, since the apostle commands them to cover their head. Now here he's talking about, in a very specific case in relationship to at Mass. That's a whole different thing, which we will talk about at another time in relationship to modesty and what they call reverentia in accesso, which is reverence and approach. That's a whole different thing. But here what he's saying is that, and today if women don't cover their hair in the general public, it's not an issue. I mean, it's just simply not a problem, unless you go to some Muslim country, I guess. Sometimes people sin against modesty by asking for the marital debt at the time in which it is inappropriate. This does not exempt one from the obligations of the marital debt in general, just in that particular moment. We all know that the marital debt binds gravely, and one can only deny it for sufficiently grave reasons. So what's a grave reason? Physical impossibility due to some physiological problem with one of the spouses, or moral impossibility. You know, well, we're in downtown, walking through the market, I don't think now's a good time. One cannot protect modesty in rendering the debt because of one's location or something of that sort. Things such as headaches and lack of romance do not suffice for denying the marital debt. You'll often hear women say that if men had a problem with what they are wearing, it is their problem. This reminds us of Cain's words to our Lord, "Am I my brother's keeper?" The answer is obviously yes, because you are the cause of the sin, and therefore you are responsible. So some other basic observations. Culture has the place of protecting modesty in all its forms as far as relations between men and women. It is principally the role of the male to protect the honor of the female, and therefore it is the place of the male, or the husband, or the father, to make sure that the women are dressed modestly, particularly his wife and daughters. Badly behaving women will only attract selfish and immoral men. Why? Because the virtuous man turns away from such things. So if she wants to attract a virtuous man, she must dress modestly so that he can look upon her. Whereas if she dresses immodestly, he'll turn away from her because he has to guard his senses. The virtue of custody of the eyes is necessary as an integral part of the virtue of modesty. There is also the problem of people being overfamiliar, which is contrary to modesty. So, and this is a big problem. I talk about this a little bit usually when I'm talking to young adults. No, you shouldn't be kissing anybody until you know the person's worthy of it. Because what's kissing? It's a sign of affection. What's affection? It's something that's due because the person is a worthy object of the affection because they're good. How do you know the person's good on the first date? This is nuts. It should be something that comes much later in the courting process, once the person has ascertained that they are in fact virtuous and therefore worthy of some signs of affection. And this usually means very late in the courting process, because it takes a while to manifest all of the virtues. And therefore, to know if the person is sufficiently virtuous and therefore worthy of our affections, we have to wait a bit. The other thing is, too, is we get a certain pleasure out of kissing people. So, what's the moral of the story? Well, pleasure affects our judgment. So you start thinking the guy's better than he is because he's a good kisser. Well, that's real bright. I mean, you need to know whether the guy's virtuous. So what you do is you abstain from that type of thing. And if he's a virtuous guy, he'll respect it. Either that or he'll be perplexed. One of the two. All right. Passionate kissing among the unmarried is a sin against the sixth commandment, and it violates modesty. I can't remember which pope it was. That stated, condemned the idea that passionate kissing was venially sinful. It's mortally sinful. The fact is that in our society today, the modesty is so extreme, prevalent, and frequent that one must develop a strong virtue of custody of the mind and of the eyes. We must guard our senses so that nothing gets into our imaginations which can lead us to sin. In the old rite form of extreme unction, all of the senses are anointed to purify the senses through which people sin, the eyes being one of them. We must guard our eyes, we must guard our children's eyes, and we must always dress and act and talk modestly. Our society is out of control regarding the sins of the sixth and ninth commandment, and one of the reasons that this is the case is because of the extreme immodesty. So what of wearing dress that is modest but fashionable, because sometimes you hear authors say you should not wear fashionable dress. There's two reasons they warn against this. One is because much of the fashionable dress is immodest in the sense of leading people in sins against the sixth and ninth commandments. But also, sometimes following the fashion can be a product of vanity. So as long as the dress doesn't proceed from vanity or manifest any vanity, and as long as it's modest in the sense of not leading people in the sixth and ninth commandments, it is, in fact, perfectly acceptable to follow the fashions of the day. Again, provided they meet those two conditions. I mentioned in a prior homily that you can wear fashionable dress as long as it's modest, and by that I meant it doesn't lead people into sin. However, there is also a problem of singularity. It is normally better to wear what is customary, that is the general fashions, than to draw attention to yourself by looking out of place or different. That's my observation about the Catholic Amish. You get people that, you know, they almost look like, if you just put the doyle on the top of their head and they walked outside, you'd swear they were Mennonites or something. So you don't have to look like that, because that causes admiratio. It draws people's attention unduly. The whole point, in fact, one of the things they used to say is that the perfection in dress consists in dressing in such a way that you do not call attention to yourself. People who adorn themselves and give these weird hairstyles and dress in such a way as to make a statement, I mentioned this before, sin against modesty. It's against humility. Yeah?
I have a question related to that. Like, what if you have things that are more decorative at Christmas time?
Oh, yeah, that's not
an issue. Okay.
Yeah, but that's part of the custom.
Yeah,
but that's part of the customs of the society. But it shouldn't be something that, you know, you walk around with a set of flowers that stick out 3 feet type of thing. I mean, or you wear the hat where the guy behind you in the pew can't even see the sanctuary. Although I do like the thing of women wearing hats and church, but provided their decorous. So yeah, nothing says they can't have a certain adornment. The issue is whether it's just moderated.
Father, when I asked earlier that you were talking about things about not suiting your husband, but adorning for your husband or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that in the beginning when you were talking, of course, these being modest things tend to be like a natural thing for the woman.
Yes.
But then when we're not with our husbands and we're coming to church and all that, it's so okay to dressed up, right? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, right?
Yeah, but St. Thomas is saying there is something a little bit different. You should look presentable and acceptable when you come to... And normally, that's the way you're dressed in front of your husband. But what he's talking about there is it's acceptable for women to wear lingerie, provided it's not crude, for the sake of pleasing her husband. Obviously, only in front of her husband and not in front of, you know, the window and things like that. So that's what he's really talking about. So they can wear things which would normally excite the normal man, because she should be trying to do that in marriage.
Okay,
that's part
yeah.
of marriage.
But, and I guess I was looking at it from the beginning, you saying, you know, yeah. you're running yourself to another, just generally.
Yeah.
And yes, it's okay if we come more dressed up at church.
Yeah, to become more dressed up in church, though, I'll talk a little bit about that when I talk about reverence and approach, because you can go to the other extreme, too. But we'll talk about that when we get there. If a woman wants to know whether something is modest or not, simply ask herself whether Our Lady would wear it or not. And for the man, he can simply ask himself whether Our Lord or whether St. Joseph would wear it. And I think these are just general principles, provided the person has a proper understanding of what St. Joseph and Our Lady are like.